I had the idea that I would do a normal show now that we have dealt with the immediate damage to our building. I thought, read, and jotted some ideas down and read some more, but it wasn't happening. My heart wasn't in it, and I realized that if my heart isn't in it, your hearts are not going to respond. That sermon was too abstract, too heady. And then I realized that this was denial, the obvious first stage of grief. Metaphorically, I have a little Arab on one of my shoulders who watches what I say and think and often talks to me, saying things like, "That doesn't make any sense." Or respond to that when I'm only vaguely understanding something. That observing self told me I was off in the weeds. Denial is an unconscious defense mechanism against painful feelings that we really don't want to acknowledge. Denial feels dull, abstracted, not quite present to both the person in denial and to others. I was in denial of my grief. Sarita, my wife, for those of you who are new here, told me that if I advertised that this sermon was about grief, 25% of you wouldn't show up for the sermon. That isn't a criticism. You have a right to not endure what's too painful to tolerate. And it isn't really about grief, but the response to loss after the first shock. I'm not going to belabor sadness, but we are very newly displaced from our building. They've also suffered a series of deaths and departures that have wounded us severely. They have affected us deeply. I call this sermon New Beginnings because what we do following loss is at least partly up to us. Not all of it is our choice, of course, or we wouldn't have suffered a loss at all. We would be in control of things. However, events affect us, and then we choose to respond. I will reference the book of Job at times because it is a case study about the implacability of faith and how to respond. Job's struggles have been a classic for millennia, and a major loss in a family or a community alters the subsequent course of events. Nathan Ackerman, one of the grandparents of family therapy, made his entire career and therapeutic focus on deaths in family systems. He wanted to know who died or suddenly left and when, and then trace the decisions family members made because of that loss. He traced the choices people made afterward and the assumptions those choices were made on. After a hole has been ripped through a family because of the death or loss of a person or home, people are shocked. They tend to regroup according to deeply primitive beliefs. So when we look at the book of Job, we learn immediately that Job lost everything except his life. He lost his house, children, flocks, and his health, but he didn't die. He lost all of that because God made a bargain with the devil to test Job. That isn't important as debatable truth, and I assume few of you would buy that as literally true. Except that after a huge loss, we can emotionally feel like we are being punished unfairly. The word pain comes from the same Latin root as punish and penalty. In mourning, we have been abandoned by fate or the universe or by God, whatever name you want for the reality of being itself that is beyond all human understanding. The book of Job is about internal fantasies and assumptions, as if they were a script for a play that conveys how deep within us there is a terrible sense of unfair abandonment after extreme losses. Job complains to God and says that if he could drag him into a court of law, he would prove his innocence, Job's good character. Job is my kind of guy. His friends tell him he must have done something wrong, maybe didn't even know. But Job doubles down and responds that he is worthy of respect. He becomes angry and seeks to bargain with God. This is a pretty good defense against hopelessness, despair, and sadness, at least temporarily. When I was helping the cleanup crew that first Sunday and Monday, I was angry. I was angry at the governmental lethargy that did not fix our flooding problem years ago when we told local officials about it. I was angry that one of our picnic tables ended up way back in the woods and I couldn't get it out from under a heavy wall. I was angry at climate change deniers. I was angry at fate as I buried a drowned rabbit. Job said, let me but call a witness in my defense. Let the Almighty state his case against me. If my accuser has written out his indictment, I would not keep silent and remain indolent. No, I would flaunt it on my shoulder. So I wanted to yell at someone like Job yelled at his so-called friends, but it wasn't really about me or someone else. I felt a little like Job during this crisis when people outside the congregation suggested, have you thought of FEMA? Have you looked at your insurance? Because it implied that we couldn't have thought of it, and partly because it is cold to just give solutions. Did they really think we hadn't done that? What did warm my heart is the Reverend Dr. Meredith Garman from the White Plains Church called very quickly, and that's what we needed. Money, I said.
I'm going to interrupt for a second. You can ask to move closer to the mic, please.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll go right up here. They are sending a $10,000 check and will send people to work if we need them. And Reverend Christina Church said in an email, I mentioned FUSW in our service this past week to my Erie, Pennsylvania congregation and shared that you all are on my heart and that contributions would be gratefully accepted. And Reverend Dr. Emily Brown from the Hastings Reformed Church emailed me that they are concerned for us and will send a check, people if we need them, and provide temporary space. These responses are empathy in action at a parallel point to where Job felt unfairly punished and blamed by his so-called friends. Simply heartwarming. Thus far, the book of Job is a standoff with nobody moving. Would it surprise you that the book of Job is very popular in schools of divinity? Students preparing for the ministry realize at some point that they have an impossible task if they are trying to sell people on a being that is all-powerful and loving, but people are still poor, oppressed, and dying. Finally, Job accepts that he cannot understand, control, or bargain with an all-powerful God who says to him directly, where were you when I laid the earth's foundations? Tell me if you know and understand. Who settled its dimensions? Surely you should know. Who provides the raven with its quarry when its fledglings croak for lack of food? Do you know when the mountain goats are born or attend the wild doe when she is in labor? Job responds by telling God that he accepts his insignificance. But acceptance is not resignation. Acceptance is understanding deep within us that this is the nature of life and we are going to embrace it. We can change our responses to a vigorous engagement with life. We can choose to pursue our highest values and be the best we can possibly be in the humble understanding that it all falls apart sometimes and finally. We can choose to enjoy what we have and who we are and strive for more without stopping, because that is what it means to be most human. Kate Bowler, whom I listened to this morning on NPR, a highly accomplished associate professor at Duke Divinity School, ended her recent article about her stage 4 cancer with this. All of our accomplishments, ridiculous. All of our striving, unnecessary. Our lives are unfinished and unfinishable. We do too much, never enough, and are done before we even started. We can only pause for a minute, clutching our to-do list at the precipice of another bounded day. The ache for more, the desire for life itself, is the hardest truth of all. Yes, the desire for life itself is a hard truth. And it is a springboard we can use to launch ourselves into living fully. Pat Callahan asked repeatedly, what is my time worth so as to maximize time spent with loved ones? That hard truth reminds us to energetically and enthusiastically choose to do something or nothing. That hard truth tells us that our one precious life is best directed at what fulfills us. Acceptance is not grudging resignation. It is making the most of your recognition that life is limited, but we still have scope for decision. We can be quiet when that is fitting. We can work when we need to. We can serve others when we feel the love. My mantra when under duress is, what have you got left? So I can begin again. Every day is a new beginning anyway. We have enough control over any day that we can make a different decision about what we plan to do with our one wild and precious life. So be it. And now I'm going to conduct a ceremony that, given the technology, will probably fail, but I still want to do it. ceremony of remembrance, you are invited to speak out loud, speak loudly, so that you can speak the losses of people, experiences, of things that were meaningful in your life, the losses in the last couple of years that you mourn. You may begin now.
Marsha and Charlene.
Cynthia.
Kelly Killian. Walter Stalky.
Anita Rice.
My parents, Margaret and Ernest Ulrich.
Jim and Anita Reitzman.
Bob Kinney. Robin Blum. Pat Callahan.
Chris, Lena, and Bill tomorrow.
Bill Updike.
Sharing or being present to each other. So be it. And it is now that we have an opportunity to share with each other our responses to the service today. When it is your turn to share, just unmute yourself.
Sing together.
And I think Sumac and Anima will locate you. If you raise your hand in the participant box or the reaction box.
I'm lost at the beginning.
Okay. A reminder to please
mute yourself. In this room.
A reminder to please mute yourself if you're not speaking.
You'll need to come up. And that'll be fine.
I have been working on meditation now for 2 years, early in the morning. And one of the things that I've had real trouble working on is this idea of impermanence. And we've certainly had many a lesson on impermanence. But there's a part of me that always wants to hold on. I want to hold on to the building. I want to hold on to my friends. I'm going to hold on to my cat. And it is so hard for me to let those things go. So I guess I got to do it, but it's going to take some time.
Thank you, Arlen, for that wonderful sermon. And I guess, you know, one of the things it brings to mind to me is the conflict between striving and acceptance. And I end up thinking about, you know, what I do and when I go to the basement and practice music and think about why am I doing this? And would it be better just to go outside and look at the sky and look at, you know, look at nature and be in the moment? And I don't have any, and it, there's like that old Buddhist thing of the two people who come to the to the wise master, and one of them says, you know, shouldn't we be meditating and really, you know, trying to be present? And the you know, the master says, yes, that's right. Yeah, and the other one says, no, but shouldn't we just accept the way things are and not strive and not and just and he says, yes, you're you know, that's correct too. And the third person says, wait a minute, they can't both be right. And the master says, well, you're right too. And I just think there's this conflict between, you know, mourning and grieving and accepting. And then also as humans, we all want to move, we need to move forward. And I guess thank you for laying out the challenges of all of that for all of us.